Take it away, Felix.
Okay, thank you. And let me start by thanking the organizers for giving me a chance to speak. And also to everyone who's missing their lunch to listen to this. So this is work that I did primarily for my PhD while I was at the University of Waterloo under the supervision of Frank Wilhelm. So the outline of my talk is I'm going to talk about adiabatic gates and what kind of errors we can expect as a result of trying to do things adiabatically in a given system. And then I'll talk about some ways of trying to remove those errors in sort of first order or adiabatic expansion kind of sense in a small parameter perturbation, as well as trying to look at higher orders. So to give a motivation here, this is sort of a typical quantum control problem where I've assumed that we can diagonalize the drift Hamiltonian and without loss of generality, then we can assume these controls here are off-diagonal. And basically, our system will have two different kinds of error. There's going to be error coming from uncertainties in the drift, or modeling errors in the drift that will increase with gate time, while there's going to be certain errors that as we go to shorter and shorter times, at some point we'll hit a wall and the error will start to increase. You can think of this error basically as coming from the fact that if we try to control some system, then as our control fields become stronger and stronger at shorter times, we'll start talking to other parts of the Hilbert space that are either connected to the system or that are connected to the control fields. And so our error will be basically the sum of these two errors. So in some kind of rotating frame, we can think of just having a zero Hamiltonian, which will give us an identity operation. And the objective of this talk is basically to try to be able to drive given transitions in the system, or maybe a couple of these, but in principle just one for the purposes of this talk. Now the adiabatic theorem basically gives us some bounds on what kind of errors we can expect from this kind of...
Just one quick question. So
yeah.
There's no diagonal elements in H, right? So the H matrix here you showed...
Oh, sorry, I moved to a rotating frame, so
okay.
I'm canceling out these. I'll go into more detail later. So we can expect the errors to come at a certain point in time that we won't be able to ignore these errors anymore. And the adiabatic theorem tells us that the error is going to scale as basically our control field amplitude divided by some energy difference in the system. And so the goal of the presentation is to try to remove this error as well as we can using various control dynamics. Problem is that we have different terms here as well that are going to, and so in general, we won't be able to exactly remove the error completely as sort of the onset of these other energy differences to other aspects of the Hilbert space come in, and instead we'll be limited by the adiabatic error coming from, say, some other error. And some other frequency difference. So in kind of reductionist terms, the first half of the talk will be to go from this brown curve to this purple curve, and the second half of the talk will then be to go from the purple curve to the red curve.
Yeah, so the adiabatic errors that you're talking about are for going non-adiabatic?
Sorry, yeah, coming from the adiabatic theorem, so non-adiabatic errors.
So you're going.
Yeah, so why don't you have the change in time of omega?
Here? Yeah, I mean, it's all related. I'll get to that.
Okay, I wouldn't look at this as a geometric theorem. I would say it would be omega dot divided by delta squared.
Okay, you're exactly right. I I think you can kind of bound omega dot from omega, but yeah. So some typical examples of where this kind of thing comes up. The first here is a Hamiltonian, which is a system of qubits. And suppose we want to drive the one qubit on resonance, but we have crosstalk to these other qubits at some frequency detuning. And so the purpose is to try to rotate one qubit while avoiding rotation on the other qubits. Another example is if we want to drive the lowest level of a harmonic of an anharmonic oscillator, then we'll have first order leakages to the next level and higher order leakages to subsequent levels after that. The third example, I'm not going to talk about much, but another example of adiabatic error is coming from the rotating wave approximation when we ignore these sort of counter-rotating terms. This is just another example of adiabatic, of non-adiabatic error. So this is the adiabatic theorem as per Wikipedia. You can see I took it from Wikipedia because these LaTeX are kind of blurry. Just as Ronnie was saying, the error comes from this derivative term. Actually, I'll get to that in a second. So if we drive on resonance, then we basically have a crossing. And things are quite easy in that case as things commute with one another. And as we increase the control field amplitude, if we start in an eigenstate, we'll end up staying in an eigenstate. In the case of an avoided crossing, if we start at zero control field, we'll sit at this point here. And as we increase the control amplitude, there will be a certain chance that we will have leakage, a jump to the other levels. So this is what our instantaneous eigenstate would look like. And so there's this dynamical phase and this geometric phase that comes along as we follow a trajectory. And in addition, we have this error term. And the functional form of it, you can see, comes from this derivative with respect to the Hamiltonian divided by the gap energy. And we'll see this coming up again and again. So we want to have a kind of systematic way of dealing with these error terms. And it's not immediately obvious how to get rid of this. If we try to add another Hamiltonian term to remove this error, then that other term will also have a derivative. And so things might get kind of complicated. In addition, we're dealing with eigenstates here, whereas the control problem is really about a Hamiltonian. So what if we don't start out in an eigenstate? What does the error look like then? What if there's multiple such errors? So we want to try to look at this in a systematic way. And the kind of best way to do that is to look at a time-dependent diagonalization of our Hamiltonian, where this is sort of the gap energy, and this is our time-dependent control field. So our transformation will look like this. This will basically change the frame of our Hamiltonian, and then this term corresponds to sort of a frame dragging where as the transformation changes, it will have this derivative term that comes along with it. So there's two kind of different paradigms. We're trying to see what the perturbative effect of this extra Hamiltonian term is. There's an interaction frame kind of approach where we exponentiate the integral of this term. And then we get an effective Hamiltonian that looks like this. Alternatively, we can look at an adiabatic expansion where we pick some S and we do an expansion. And what the condition that we end up wanting to enforce is that the commutator cancels out here. And so to a first order, we diagonalize this term. So the main difference between these two approaches is that in the first, this term cancels out with the derivative here, while in the second, we basically diagonalize away this term. Neither picture is entirely satisfying. in one case, we're left with off-diagonal terms here, and in the other case, we're left with off-diagonal terms here. So we want to try to be able to quantify exactly what the size of these different errors will be. So a good way to do that is to look at the semi-classical picture of the excitation spectrum, which basically corresponds to taking a Fourier transform of our pulse and looking at its spectral properties and seeing if it has a non-zero spectrum at the unwanted transition. We can play a kind of trick here and perform this integration by parts. The boundary term goes to zero if we assume that our control field starts and ends at zero at the beginning and end of the pulse. And then we see here that there's a correspondence between the control field and the derivative of the control field divided by the gap energy, just like in the adiabatic theorem. And this gives us a quantitative understanding of exactly what these derivative terms will contribute to our error in the sort of long time limit, which corresponds to the semi-classical limit. We see that these derivative terms are not only not smaller than the original terms, but actually end up being a higher contribution in terms of basically our small parameter, which is 1 over delta. It also gives us an intuition about how to remove the error from this unwanted transition. So here I've plotted the Fourier transform of our pulse. We see that the blue line is a typical waveform, which would be a Gaussian here, and it has clearly non-zero spectrum at the unwanted transition. The derivative is plotted in purple, and being the derivative being anti-symmetric, it will not have it'll have a negligible contribution at this transition. But if we exactly set the factor of the derivative according to this thing here, then the two spectra cancel each other out, and we get zero spectral contribution at this transition. So the solution is sort of to add an imaginary component to our field, which is proportional to the derivative divided by the gap. This is a semi-classical analysis. We can then move on to a quantum analysis using the same intuition. And we can look again at this expansion that we were doing before, this adiabatic expansion, and we can try to now cancel out terms according to the different orders that they'll take up. So again, we have this condition that we want the commutator to cancel out with the leakage term, which we have there. And then we have this additional term, which corresponds to moving to an interaction picture. What we've done here is we've added an additional term, H2, corresponding essentially to the off-phase control. And when we take the integral of it, then we get our generator for our transformation. This allows us to cancel out H2 with the derivative. These terms commute with each other. And all we're left with is with this term here, which to first order is just essentially a Stark shift, as well as higher order contributions. So going back to my second example, which was leakage, we can try to address the problem in that case. So going back to Lynn's question, so if we assume this kind of rotating, this kind of lag frame picture, where the qubit is basically in the lowest two levels, we can move to a rotating frame, and then this term will basically go roughly to zero if we assume this delta is small. So the objective here is to try to drive this qubit, and as if we can ignore the effect of this extra terms as being small or somehow cancel them out, then we should be able to get exactly a unitary by exponentiating this Hamiltonian. So our objective is to try to obtain exactly this Hamiltonian where these extra terms will go to zero. And so we solved this problem back in 2009 for the leakage problem. And so let me go through it here. We have our Hamiltonian from the last slide in the rotating frame, and we want to go to this other frame where we can neglect the effect of these leakage terms. If we were to naively apply the adiabatic expansion, then this V here would be what would diagonalize away these terms, but we would be left with this derivative term here. And there would be no good way to remove it since it doesn't correspond to any control. So the trick is to add in these extra terms inside our transformation. And now the first effect is basically just an extra Stark shift coming from these off-diagonal terms. And the second effect is that we now have exactly a form of our derivative that we can cancel out with an additional control in the imaginary part of the control. So visually what this looks like is we have our waveform here again, a Gaussian, and we add in an imaginary derivative contribution, and this delta here just corresponds to our detuning to keep things on resonance. Note that we have sigma x, sigma y, and sigma z here. We only really need two of them, and it's easy to come up with a solution with just the two of them. So in terms of the error, we see that at long times this completely removes the error just by including this derivative and going to higher orders in the adiabatic expansion at longer gate times. This was verified experimentally at a couple of different places. And so just as in the first slide, we have the incoherent error here, which is dominating at long times. But as we move to shorter times, we see that the contribution coming from the leakage can be entirely suppressed by adding in this derivative correction. We can also look at things numerically. See here that if we just have a single control, a sigma x control, we can go to shorter times and optimize things, but at some point we hit a quantum speed limit coming from the fact that our leakage level will need some time basically to process around in order to get a full solution to arbitrary nines. On the other hand, if we can generate the entire algebra, then as we move to, as we include more controls in our system by going to shorter and shorter pixel widths, then we can get to arbitrarily small errors in sort of a diabatic limit. This blue curve here is not really crucial to understand how we get it, but this is basically the adiabatic limit. And if you're curious, basically we're including an extra tone here at the frequency of the omega 0-2 transition. But essentially, just as in that first slide, we have this kind of wall here where we can't go shorter in this adiabatic limit. The second example is the crosstalk example. And so we want to drive this qubit. If we go to shorter times, the bandwidth will start getting larger and we'll start talking to these other qubits. This is very similar to the leakage problem, I should say, that just we're looking at, where we have these extra transitions that we wanted to avoid talking to. The main difference here being that we can have transitions on both sides. If we were to put a first derivative in here, it would actually give us the opportunity to cancel out the spectral contribution here through sort of destructive interference. The problem being they would interfere constructively and actually increase this transition over here. So we want to sort of generalize the argument to extra transitions. In the case of just a single unwanted transition, though, we can solve this system exactly. It's not too bad. It's just two qubits. And the general solution here is, rather than just having the derivative divided by the gap energy, we have an additional arctan contribution. What this looks like visually, again, we have, at long times, it just looks like the first order solution. At short times, we see the imaginary control doesn't look exactly like a derivative anymore. Now, we have basically three errors that we want to correct for. We have rotation error on the first qubit. We have resonance. We want to stay on resonance when we're driving. So there's sort of phase error here. And secondly, we want to avoid rotation on this second qubit. So I've already talked about this equation. Basically, this cancels out the leakage error. This equation here ensures that our rotation will give us exactly the amount of rotation of our qubit that we desire, and this is the resonance condition. What's nice to notice here is that as omega increases, if we have omega larger than 4 delta, then the detuning is no longer real, and we don't have a well-defined solution anymore. This corresponds exactly to this wall again here that we hit at a short time, where we can no longer cancel out this error using this technique. The blue line here is again the Gaussian. So we try to generalize to a system of n qubits. We have again these avoided crossings and these control fields, and we want to add in these additional contributions. Now, not only just coming from the first derivative, but also second derivative, third derivative, and so forth. And we want to try to solve multiple of these avoided crossings at the same time. To do this, we do a nested transformation, which looks like this. And then we expand the exponents in terms of higher order derivatives of our wave function. After a whole lot of algebra, we end up with basically a self-consistency equation that tells us exactly what the contributions are of each order of derivative, where r is basically the order of the derivative, I think. And so we can think of this as if we have some amount of leakage in our system at some anti-crossing delta L, and for some L, the first derivative will remove some error, the next derivative will remove some other error, and the next derivative will remove some other error. Whereas for a different L, the first derivative might remove this much, the next derivative might remove this much, and the next derivative might remove this much. And so we essentially have a system of linear equations where we want to be able to solve all of these conditions at the same time. And when we do that, we basically get the prefactors in front of our different derivatives. And I should mention, this is basically just the first order solution. So when we do this, we can, again, just for two qubits, just for demonstration purposes, the red line here was using our first derivative. This solution, if we just the second derivative, we get this solution. You see there's no dephasing because the control sort of commutes with itself at all times. And then this is the third derivative solution in green. This is kind of just the generating function for these different solutions. And so for if we have multiple qubits that we want to try to avoid crosstalk to, for example, three qubits, then we can combine pairs of derivatives, the first and second, first and third, first and fourth, maybe, I don't know, first and second and fourth. And again, we see a drastic removal of the leakage of the crosstalk error as compared to just a simple Gaussian pulse. For four qubits, we have the first, second, and third derivative, and again, we can suppress this error. Finally, let me return to the leakage problem, where we want to avoid leakage to this leakage state. And in this case, we want to try to remove higher order contributions, so not just the first order leakage here, but sort of higher contributions in the small parameter. So we have this iterative solution given by this transformation Vn. The first order is basically what I showed on the first slide, where basically we had this commutator which was diagonalizing the system, and additionally we had this extra term in our Hamiltonian which was ensuring that our derivative goes to zero. But now we include this extra term H3 here, which is going to be essentially proportional to, or include a contribution of the second derivative of our driving field. This is the next order Hamiltonian, and we want now to apply the next transformation to this. We have similar conditions here, which I'm not going to go through all the details, but basically we again can diagonalize the unwanted term and remove the derivative contribution. And we can do this to higher order. So here I compare using no derivative, first derivative, or second derivative. I plot the gate error as a function of the coupling strength to the leakage level. If we have no derivative, we see that the expansion quickly asymptotes to this green line here, where basically we're removing the stark shift error and then a little bit of rotation error, but we can't really do any better than that. With the first derivative, we can remove the stark shift error as well as the first order leakage error, and we can remove the rotation error, and we can remove a little bit more of the rotation than the stark shift error. If we include a second derivative, however, we remove the first order error, we remove the rotation error on the qubit, but we also remove the leakage, the 0-2 transition leakage. And then we can do further than that. I've only calculated the next order, but presumably we can go to higher. And here, this is again sort of a rotation error and phase error that we can remove. Now the adiabatic limit corresponds here roughly to lambda equals 2, where sort of lambda times omega is larger than the gap delta. So with that, let me conclude. We've shown that we can include this off-phase derivative to suppress these anti-crossings, shown how to remove multiple such anti-crossings in the first order. We've also shown a perturbative expansion for a single such anti-crossing as we want to suppress the error completely. Some open questions are, can we combine these? What other kinds of waveforms can we use besides guessing? Since the only condition was really to use a derivative, there was nothing on the actual waveform. So this could, for example, be used with dynamical decoupling pulses or broadband pulses or various other kinds of time-dependent schemes. And finally, can we move sort of this barrier that we have that tells us the minimum time? Is there ways to go past it? So with that, let me ask you for questions. We haven't combined it per se with optimization. We have, in some cases, looked at the numerical control. And obviously, the numerical control always does better, but it seems to, in many cases, to scale very similarly. And especially in sort of the adiabatic limit, we can sort of go to higher, to arbitrary order in many cases, just like the numerical solution.
So if you go to higher order, do the solutions converge to what you would get? There's numerical control that use numerical optimization. I mean, I have no idea, there could be many mechanisms. In the limit, if you remove many higher order terms, would the solution...
I think that there's, in general, in these kinds of systems, there's an sort of infinite family of solutions, so you wouldn't get exactly the same.
But you could start from what you have and as your initial guess for optimal control, then see how much you can do better. And then you'll have a solution that will be very close to the one that you started
with. Mm-hmm. Right. So, for example, we did that in the leakage problem, and actually we did things in the opposite order. So the numerics that we found actually gave us this derivative-like structure, and then we were wondering, where does this derivative come from? And we came up with this analytic solution. So actually it is very much what the numerics find, sort of qualitative level. The higher order contributions, though, I would say, are generally different.
There's something very basic, which is, I'm sure, even my own ignorance. When I think about the adiabatic kind of evolution, I typically am thinking about, I want to map a state. So
right.
I want to keep it adiabatic. But you're talking about adiabatic gates.
Yes.
So what do you mean by that? I mean, I think about a gate as a unitary on a something of coexistence with more than one dimension.
Exactly.
So what do you mean by the adiabatic gate in this case?
That's a good question, actually. So,
you know, you're trying to make things like, you know, combinations of Pauli gates on collections of qubits, but in some sense you're using some adiabatic pinch criterion to maintain your errors, and right. I just didn't catch it.
Okay, so we have this adiabatic theorem, which talks about states, as you say, and the goal is to go to a frame transformation, mm-hmm. And we have this thing called the adiabatic expansion, which basically gives us an idea of what the higher order errors when we try to diagonalize our Hamiltonian. So
it's just that your local, it has to do with your frame, that there's more than one state that's staying adiabatic, and you're kind of trying to drag the frame appropriately.
Exactly. Right? You want basically all of your eigenstates to remain diagonal.
By the way, I have a comment of this slice. It's not only come from Wikipedia. It's actually also in this, exactly the same as in Griffith's quantum mechanics.
Okay.
Probably in Sakurai. Yeah, sure. Right, okay. I think I got it.
Yeah, but I think the point that you said is exactly right. You want to keep the whole Hamiltonian to be adiabatic, not only one state.
Right. So some basis you're
trying to do so.
Gotcha.
So you have many gaps, and the larger the Hamiltonian it is, it's more difficult. But in principle, that can be done.
Sure. Any other comments, questions? All right. If not, let's thank you again.